Hello and welcome back to our final Abundance of Not podcast of 2014. Garrett here with Brad and Wade.
How you guys Hello. Doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Apparently, I'm the only one not sick.
Yeah. Apparently, Brad decided to, you know, be on his deathbed or whatever this week, and I'm fighting back a little cold. Alka-Seltzer has been my friend. No, we're not sponsored by them, but it is doing me
maybe we should be
wonders. Maybe we should reach out.
When you need that relief, Alka-Seltzer.
Yeah.
Alka-Seltzer.
This is the last we could possibly do a podcast.
It is. It's the last part. I mean, we're down to the hour.
Yes, we are. Less.
I mean, we are. This is December 31st. Making sure we're on the cusp.
6:45?
In some parts of our listening area, it is already next year.
It very well could be. So we haven't talked in what feels like forever. Brad, it's been, what, 2 weeks?
Yes, we took last week off because of the holiday.
We did take last week off. We hope everyone had a good and safe holiday with Christmas for our Christmas celebrators.
No one shot their eye out with a Red Ryder.
Yep, hopefully the people kept their Red Ryders in control.
Maybe. I can neither confirm nor deny.
That's right. We'll not speculate or make comment on that allegation. How was your early Christmas? Did we talk to you after your Christmas with your boys?
No, I don't believe so.
I don't think we did.
Mm-mm. So we had family come up, and we have our Christmas on the weekend before Christmas. So it was actually pretty good. some much wanted packages got unwrapped. The boys and I all got quadcopters for Christmas from my dad.
Fun.
Don't drive me to the airport.
Yeah.
No, we are 20 miles from the airport, and I definitely keep it below 400 feet.
I don't think the one you got will communicate beyond about 50 feet anyway.
I'd like to see those things.
Might be surprised.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I know it wasn't anywhere near 400 feet, but I reckon I got it up maybe 100, 150.
Did you try to shoot it with some fireworks?
No.
That'd have been funny.
I'd like to see those things just when if they ever do get a flight like restriction, it'd probably be like 350 high. It just shuts off.
Yeah.
It's like,
falls back to Earth.
You want to tempt fate? Well, guess what? Broken.
The legal limit is 400. If you exceed 450, it goes into pure shutdown mode. Whatever damage you receive.
That was your own fault.
That's your problem.
That is not covered by warranty.
We gave you a 50-foot,
breathing
threshold, and you decided. So shame on you. No, that's cool. The boys enjoying that.
Yeah, they're having fun with theirs. Theirs is just the quadcopter. Mine's a quadcopter with a built-in camera.
Okay.
So I've taken some shots over our house, and like I said, I reckon about 100, 150 feet, you can get some pretty decent shots of the neighborhood from it. So that's impressive.
Awesome. For There's as little our as it neighbor, is. Sunbathing topless.
Yeah.
Boys, we would not be looking at that one today.
That's right. Mm-hmm. We're not putting that one on the website.
Yeah, I think I have one that's similar to probably what the boys have based on the picture you showed me. And I think it didn't have any rotor protection on it. And I ran into the wall a few times. So it doesn't fly so good anymore.
Yeah, that was the second gift that we unwrapped from my dad.
Rotor protectors?
The first one was the quadcopters. The second one was the rotor protectors.
Nice. Yeah, those are important.
So, they are. It actually makes it fairly hardy.
Yep. And a little nick in those little plastic rotors make a big, big impact.
Yes, yes, it does. So, after Christmas, we went to, I don't know if you guys have them out west. It's a place called Sky Zone.
Yeah.
Yep.
Some
indoor trampoline park.
Yeah.
So we spent an hour there jumping around, and then after Christmas, Seeing as we have 2 weeks to catch up on, some friends came and visited, and we went and played paintball.
Nice.
Yep.
And you have a new paintball gun from the last time I saw you.
Yes, I do. I got the Tippmann Tip-X pistol. So I pulled that out and shot off a few rounds with that one as well. That was a lot of fun.
Very cool. I have to take a look at mine. I haven't really looked at mine since I was out visiting you, so I don't know what their order is now. If they're functional or if their needle rings replaced or what, I don't know.
I'm going to say probably.
They probably at least need to clean out and maybe some oil.
Yeah, agreed. No, I think I cleaned them out, but I think when I put the pistol back together, I found an O-ring left over. I don't know if it's supposed to go in the gun or if it's from something else that was in the same area. I don't know, so the jury's...
Meh.
Jury's spare down parts. A little bit.
That's like when you're building a weightlifting machine and be like, oh, all these parts must be extras.
Yeah. There's one bolt left over. Where does that go?
Yep.
Turns out.
So what'd you do for the wife for Christmas?
Actually, we did a lot of practical gifts for each other this year. So she got scarves and sweaters and stuff for the kitchen that she'd been wanting.
There's a place for that.
Yep.
So, not to discredit the practical gifts, sometimes they're the best gifts.
Well, and we spent the couple weeks before Christmas arguing over what to get each other because, you know, there wasn't a lot of stuff.
When you go, where's the wooden spoon? I don't know. Christmas gift.
Yeah.
I know what you're getting Christmas.
Cha-ching, there's the stocking stuffer. Very cool. Yeah, we, the focus in our house was definitely my daughter. We all spoiled her rotten, and we didn't really do a whole lot for each other.
Yep.
You know, Wade's curious about the steampunk stuff. I got him some steampunk books. My mom wanted a new watch, so we got her, you know, nothing special, a little $40 watch just to have a silver watch to accessorize with and that kind of stuff. But yeah, the kid, like always and like they should, made out like a bandit.
Absolutely.
Oh, God, she has like 4 Christmases.
Yep.
It's crazy.
So she had her Christmas morning with us. She went over to her mom's house and had Christmas there. And then she and I went out to the river to see my dad for a couple days. We just got back. So she had a third Christmas there. And then we have plans to link up with Wade and my uncle. And they usually go all out for her as well. So I'm not really sure when that's happening, but it's on the horizon. But yeah, she got... anything and everything under the sun. She got some martial arts stuff. She got some Monster High stuff.
Some weird logic.
Yeah, a little puzzle. logic puzzle game thing. So yeah, she had it set up. Well, I mean, and that's good. And that was kind of the goal.
Absolutely.
So
that's the way it should be.
Yep.
Keep the magic going.
And for us, we'll talk about this in movies, but a little tradition for us is on Christmas Eve, we always go and see a movie, especially when we have the kid, because Christmas Eve always seems to take forever for kids. And what better way to burn about 2 or 3 hours than going to the movie theater? So we saw Night at the Museum, and we will talk about that here in a minute.
Yes, we will.
Wade, do you have anything further to add on the Christmas situation?
Well, I got some nice little things. Little figurines from Funko Pop.
Yeah, the Funko Pop stuff is kind of something we've gotten into a little bit here and there. I've got some Game of Thrones figures. My mom has some Walking Dead figures. And Funko Pop just partnered with Blizzard, and they do World of Warcraft figures.
Yep. And they also have the little one has the How to Train Your Dragon ones as well.
Yep, we have some How to Train Your Dragon ones as well, so those are pretty fun.
Every member of the family has Funko Pop, so... got some steampunk, as Garrett... referenced, and some goggles. I put those on my hat. Those are more aesthetic than actual use.
Yep.
Well, we got the cars fixed. That was fun.
Yeah, so we've been talking about some car issues lately. Brake issues.
You and me both. Cars.
Yeah, I hear. You'll get your turn. You wait. It's my turn.
Right sorry, now. Sorry.
It's our turn.
Sorry.
Go away.
So we were doing the brakes on the one car, and we pulled off the driver wheel and noticed that the caliper had shifted on the rotor and had totally just obliterated the rotor, and the caliper was just leaking brake fluid like crazy.
Let's just say that the caliper was in a very odd angle. When I came out, when the rest of the family got home, Garrett thought I'd been messing with...
Yeah, it had shifted so much that it looked like Wade had already unbolted it and set it back on the rotor. I mean, it was trying to break at the corner edge of the rotor instead of the flat surface. It was bad.
That's not good.
Yeah, no. Wade had three wheels of braking for a long time as this thing just wore its way down.
When I came out and said, I haven't touched the caliper, Garrett was like, what?
Yeah, it was scary. It's one of those things that you find and you scratch your head and wonder why someone hasn't died yet.
Yeah,
it was
wondering
bad.
Why I'm still here.
Yeah. So we ordered a new caliper from one of the online joints. And that showed up, and we got it all back together, the day after Christmas?
Pretty much,
yep. And it's been good to go since. Now I've got to get my truck into the shop and figure out what's going on with the 4x4 situation so that I can have some confidence in that again.
Keep in mind, the rotor was almost non-existent.
The edge of it looked like a saw blade. It was that bad.
Wow.
Yeah. So, scary, scary stuff. But yeah, we got the cars done, so that's...
I feel safer.
Good.
Yep. What are your car issues?
First of all, I want to back up to Christmas because I had forgotten. I knew that there was one big gift we got each other this year.
Mine, we already
talked about. I went to the TSO, Trans-Siberian Orchestra concert.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I think we talked about that.
Yep, we talked about that before Christmas. My wife's Christmas present was she got a new camera this year.
Ooh.
She'd been getting more into the photos and photography, and she got the reason it slipped by memory is she actually got to open it early. We got it in time for her to use on our trip to Buffalo and Niagara a couple weeks before Christmas. So.
Oh, got it. Cool.
Ah, cool.
Yep. So, car issues. Both mine and my wife's car, we have the same year, same model. You know, we're one
same
of those
problem.
His and hers cars.
Yep.
They're both subject to a couple of recalls, so we got that scheduled to get serviced, but she's been having an issue with the taillight, and mine, the lower control arm, I just replaced the back bushing on it. The rubber piece blew out, so I had to replace that again. Thankfully, that was under warranty.
Nice.
Cool.
Sounds like I'm having a bearing issue with one of my wheels.
Those are a pain. I've done those.
Yeah.
I did it in a 72 Mustang. A guy I went to school with needed them done, and
yep.
We had access to a full auto shop, so it wasn't too bad, but you got to disassemble the whole front end, or, you know,
yep,
assuming.
Pretty much.
God, I'm just shivering at that thought.
Whew. Yeah. You know, we only pulled off the rotor for the car we were doing.
Yeah.
You got to pull the rotor off, you got to pull the spindle out, you've got to, it's chaos.
It's major.
It scares me when
the part itself isn't that major, but getting to it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, getting to it, making sure it's packed with grease sufficiently, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, it's not a fun one.
It scares me how dangerous cars can be, but then how fragile they can be as well. You know, you have one thing that's not set right, and you could die.
Yeah, a guy at work
absolutely.
Has a saying.
And yet contrast that, though, with the fact, you know, they can be fragile, but they can be fairly resilient. I mean, how long have your brakes been wrong, and it still stops you?
God, we've lost
that.
Maybe not as well as it should, but they've still been working.
That's true. No, a guy at work has a saying that says, the more you learn, the less you know. And what he means by that is, as you learn more things through life, you realize how much you don't know.
Yeah.
And with cars... When you start tinkering with stuff, you realize all the little systems that it has, and you wonder out of so many things that could go wrong, like, how does it ever just go right? I mean, there's so many little intricacies, there's so many little things that, you know, could just fail at any time that you scratch your head and wonder how it ever stays right. So it's, it's one of those little conundrums.
It's so strong, yet so fragile.
Yep.
Weird.
Anyway, are we good with that? Are we ready to move on?
I think so.
All right. Give me one second here, because of course, there it is. And into movies. I had my notes in the way of the deal, so that's what happened there. In movies, we've got three major movies coming out this week. We have Woman in Black 2. This is a horror movie rated PG-13. A group of orphans move from London to the British countryside with their caretakers Eve and Jean. This takes place 40 years after the first Woman in Black film.
Never seen it.
It is noted this is a horror movie if you haven't seen the trailers yet. But the new group is introduced to the Eel Marsh House, which is an old but seemingly safe location. Isn't long, though, before Eve and Jean realize something's going wrong as the children are disappearing. As their seemingly safe house becomes a house of horrors. Eve enlists the help of a pilot to help investigate what is happening.
Yeah, things definitely start to go wrong when the kids disappear.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of big.
Yeah, this only got like a 33% critic rating. So as far as movies go, not so great. As far as horror movies go, to be determined, I suppose. Additionally, coming out is A Most Violent Year. This is rated R. This is based in the winter of 1981, which statistically is one of the most crime-ridden of New York City's history. This drama follows the lives of an immigrant and his family who attempt to capitalize on the American dream while the rampant violence, decay, and corruption of the day drag them in and threaten to destroy what they've built. So, looks like a kind of a heart-wrenching sort of struggle to succeed. Could be interesting. I believe that got like an 89% critic rating, so that looks fairly decent. And finally, a documentary called The Search for General Tso. It's spelled T-S-O. General Tso's Chicken is the staple of Chinese-American cooking and is its ubiquitous presence on restaurant menus across the country. Who is General Tso? And how did his chicken become emblematic of an entire national cuisine? So we journey through Shanghai, New York, and the American Midwest and beyond to uncover the origins of this iconic dish, turning up surprising revelations and a host of humorous characters along the way. And it is told with the vibe of a good detective story. So it could be kind of interesting. It's all about, this chicken giant that's become a staple. So that actually could be really entertaining. In the box office this week, no real surprise here, Hobbit Battle of the Five Armies pulled in $40.9 million. Into the Woods pulled in $31.1 million. Unbroken, which is the Angelina Jolie-directed film, at $30.6 million. And Night at the Museum, Secret of the Tomb, pulled in $20.2 million. So with that, we have a few things to discuss.
Yes, we do.
First of all, I want to go back to, you said you saw Big Hero 6, and there was some criticism as to its quality versus the Penguins of Madagascar.
Now that you've seen both,
do you want to change your tune a little bit, or are you confident in your previous statement?
No, I'm definitely standing by Penguins. But then I'm a Penguins fan. That being said, Big Hero 6 was definitely enjoyable. But I would say that both of them, took different tacks on it. They're not directly comparable. Yes, they're both cartoons, but they went different ways with different stories. Both really, really, really enjoyable.
Oh, totally agree with that. I think from a viewing again, I think Big Hero 6 might be stronger for me than Penguins was. But
that's fine. You're entitled to have a wrong opinion.
Yeah, I know I am. And I'm going to stand strong by my wrong opinion. But they're both good. But like you said, they're not meant to be run side by side, which is better here and there.
Absolutely.
I love the animation, though, with the microbots. I just thought that was just brilliant and so well executed.
Yes, it was. No, they did a great job with it.
So, very good. Like I mentioned, we saw Night at the Museum Christmas Eve. We also saw Hobbit this past weekend, so we can touch base on both. Night at the Museum, I enjoyed. I mean, I've enjoyed all of these movies with the realm and the depth of their cast and their stories. I thought it was really fun. I like how they played off of the wax factor in this movie.
Absolutely.
I thought that was really, really well done. But yeah, I definitely recommend seeing this. I mean, it does stand on its own without seeing the other two movies. The other two do help, but they're not as necessary as some other sequels or movie series would be to see the entire set.
Without giving away any spoilers, was the ending of the movie touching for you?
Yes, I was wondering how we should touch base on that. Yeah, definitely a touching ending on that one. And I'm kind of glad that it happened, given the circumstances and how they did it. Granted, they didn't do it. It was done long, you know, in the time frame that it needed to be. But the way things all fell together, I thought it was perfect.
You're right.
Excuse us why Brad coughs out a lung.
Yeah, sorry. Had a spare lung there. And those of you that do go and see the movie, once you've seen it, you'll know exactly what we're talking about. Again, trying not to give away any spoilers here. But at the end, when the certain character is going back to wax form, it felt almost like, as they say in the business, he was breaking the fourth wall.
Yep.
That he wasn't talking to the character in the film, that he was reaching out and talking to the audience.
And I wonder how much of that was, is audience projection versus writing and cinematography.
Were we knowing now what happened? Do we see it as the event? It's so hard to say this without, like...
I know, it's so hard to be cryptic.
Or was that particular person reaching out in advance?
Yeah.
It's true. It's, who knows? Anyway, go see the movie. You know what we're talking about.
That's about as vague as we can be and say anything meaningful without giving it completely away. You haven't pieced it together yet.
That's your problem.
I felt that it could have been better, though. I mean, it does feel like Night at the Museum, they're just trying to milk it for what it's worth by now.
Well, that's the problem you get with any sequel, though.
Yeah.
I mean, they're on a good thing, you know, and they try and make a run with it. I felt the story was decent and stood on its own very well. We definitely enjoyed it, but I can see your point, Wade, that they're, you know, taking a sure thing and stretching it.
Yeah, a few things felt forced. A few things were, I mean, a lot of it was well done. The graphics wise, and especially with Owen Wilson and the and the other character Octavius, just those two miniatures around the rest of the movie are just hilarious to see how they interact. Absolutely. And how they fit him in.
I wish to comment. Bring the apparatus.
That was awesome at the beginning of the movie. That was great. Forgot about that. But yeah, I mean, definitely recommend it. Check it out. And if you guys disagree with what we have to say, feel free to let us know on Facebook or something.
Absolutely.
We also saw The Hobbit, as mentioned, this past weekend. And even though it's been out for 2 weeks, the theater was booked. I mean, it was sold out when we were just after we bought our tickets.
Did you like buy like two tickets and then like the next person who was in our group was like, nope, it's...
Well, I had a free movie pass and they wanted like $2 because it was over the 14 or within a certain time limit. And so I said, okay, yeah, whatever. And then they charged me for an additional ticket. So I had bought two and I only needed one. But luckily, one of our group was in line, and they had just made an announcement that it was like 80% or whatever. And I said, here, I've got a ticket. Just, you know, give me money for the ticket. Well, I guess right after I gave it to her, they announced that it was sold out. And it's like, well, Wow. We have another person who's supposed to be coming. How are they going to get in? So with a little swindling and dishonesty, we got the party together. I'm not going to divulge more than that.
Yeah. And moving on.
No, I mean, these movies, obviously, they're extremely well done visually. They're extremely well done acting-wise. It picks up exactly where the last movie left off. There was no interlude. There was no, hey, this is what you missed last time.
Last time on The Hobbit.
Yeah, it was meant to, you know, at least put the second and third movie in together and have a 5-hour sit down and watch them or whatever it ends up being.
So if I remember correctly, Desolation of Smaug ends with Smaug flying out over the lake towards the city.
Correct.
Before and it cold lake cuts town. Right there.
And it begins with him torching it, so...
Yeah. Spoiler alert. Alrighty. Lake Town fries. So, I like when they do that. I liked when they did it with Harry Potter with 7.1 and 7.2. I mean, the ending scene for 7.1 was the opening scene for 7.2. Yep. You know, bring it together.
They're designed to be watched back to back.
Exactly. I really enjoy it. Like I said, I enjoy these movies. I didn't read any of the books, so any of the creative licensing that was taken.
We didn't see it.
We were able to just accept it because that's all that we've known. But I don't know what else to say about it. Go see it if you haven't. If you're interested in the Hobbit and Lord of the Rings worlds. You won't be disappointed.
God, I just thought of something. How long would it take to watch the first Hobbit all the way to the last Lord of the Rings?
Considering the last Lord of the Rings is 3.5 hours long and the rest of the movies are at least 2 hours long, you got 6 movies, that's 12 hours, give or take, couple hours for excess, so 14, 15 hours.
At least, I think some of the extended cuts of the original 3 push 4.
Yeah. So you're talking a weekend.
Yeah. I did like the ending with the call out saying, you know, okay, we're going to go right to this.
Yeah, that is true. The ending of The Hobbit is essentially the opening scene for the first Lord of the Rings as well.
Yeah.
So they bridge that gap for us that you can just then watch the next series.
It could have been like, what's Legolas doing for the next 100 years? Because we know elves.
Yeah. Although that is interesting. Go and do it. Because that begs a big question with that scene and the chronology of the movie. That's interesting. That could be an offline discussion. Anyway, yeah, nothing but good things to say on the movie front. Mm-hmm. I rarely give something a don't go see it, but and that's not again happening this time. So
I don't know why you brought that up. Really,
yeah, really. Realistically, I'm a horrible critic. That's what it is, because I like what I see and I see what I like.
But you're not trained to be like spot every minute problem. Yeah. You're like, screw it, I'm just gonna go see it and have fun.
Exactly, and then I'll let you know what I thought. All right, with that, let's jump into some news.
Before you move on.
Oh no. Okay.
Before you move on, I just found some information which may be of use. I'm just calculating here.
Interns ho.
Okay, so the original, just the first 3, The Lord of the Rings.
Theatrical editions?
The theatrical edition is 558 minutes, which comes out to 9.3 hours.
Jesus, really?
Okay. Wow. The extended cut is 681 minutes, which comes out to 11.33 hours.
Wow.
Unless you're fortunate and you've bought the extended cut Blu-ray edition.
Uh-oh.
In which case, it's 726 minutes, which works out to, oops, calculator carry malfunction. The one. Yep, operator error. Works out to 12, just over 12 hours.
Jeez. So you're watching The Hobbit one day and the Lord of the Rings series the next day. It's a weekend event.
Pretty much.
Yeah,
unless you're planning a 24-hour marathon.
I'd love to do that with the show 24. You know, you pause it and you you go do your business because the commercial breaks and stuff like that, they give you a few minutes here and there. But you'll notice throughout that entire day, the main character never goes to the bathroom. He never eats anything. It's like something wrong with his anatomy.
Yeah.
He stopped and grabbed, like, to go along the way.
In that 5-minute break we didn't see, he wolfed down a cheeseburger.
Going down, he's like, McDonald's, just like, dude, look, I gotta get a freaking burger, man.
Too funny.
Fighting terrorists, jeez.
Yep.
Makes a guy hungry.
All right, well,
All right, roll on.
We're going to news now.
So it's been a couple weeks in news. We're going to start off fairly low-key, kind of fun. We covered, I believe, that Notch, Marcus Pearson, the creator of Minecraft, has sold his interests in the game and the company. And what more natural thing to do with his $1.5 billion than to buy himself a mansion in Beverly Hills?
Take a drink, by the way. That was a B.
Yeah, that was a B.
That was a B. B for billion, take a drink.
There's another one.
So he outbid Beyonce and Shawn Knowles for the most expensive mansion in Beverly Hills, paying reportedly somewhere between $70 and $85 million.
Why?
Because he can now. Okay. So in true fan style, the first thing that, or one of the first things that the community did was look up the real estate listings for this mansion and recreate it in Minecraft.
That's brilliant.
You just sell that.
So there's a video, the link will be in the show notes, where you can watch a Minecraft tour of Notch's new mansion.
That's funny.
Severely
I hope they
low
posted
res.
Like the address like on the video.
Severely low res. It's
yeah, yeah. It's very blocky. lots of right angles.
Very pixelated.
Not sure about his decor, but, you know, funny. It looks very much like if you guys remember from Avengers or the Iron Man series, the Stark Mansion.
Yep.
Or not. Yeah. No.
Yeah.
Am I missing? Yes.
The Stark
Sorry.
Home.
No. Not a big Marvel guy here, but Stark's house on the hillside, it looks very much like that, or reminded me of that at least.
Really? I'll have to pick it up then.
Yeah.
Yep. Very cool.
So, check out the links in the show notes and watch the video. It's intriguing.
Nice. I'm going to jump on this just to stick with, you know, the B word. We all know and some of us love Apple, Brad. And
yes,
we all know that they're very good on taking our money, Brad.
yes.
And one of the ways they do this is by giving us the least amount of storage possible in their base model iPhone. Do I say least possible because they could not make a smaller one? No, I mean, it's 16 gigs, and for most that sounds like a lot. But long-term use, 16 gigs is not that much when you talk about music, movies, apps, so on and so forth, that the 16 gig version is really Apple's way of saying, here, join the Apple family, but when you upgrade, you're not going to want the 16 gig anymore. But what does that mean? Well, a report from Above Avalon was released Thursday saying that Apple will enjoy $3 billion in profit from the base model iPhone. Which
is that from people buying it or from people buying the next size because the first one was too small?
That is from people buying the first one and the profitability for that, even though the base model has been dubbed a handicapped version of the iPhone or also a terrible option in the line of iPhones. Now, let me see what you guys think of this. I disagree with this statement, but here it goes anyway. An author, Neil Seibert, estimates that if the company were to remove the 16 gigabyte option, Apple would lose out on $3 billion. Agree, disagree?
Why can't you see this as a trap? It's not, you know, deliberately, but...
No, it's deliberate.
Okay, well, hold on, let me say it. We all know that you know, if we said it before that if you have your media on one device, you're less likely to break off of it. What is the major device which supports iPhones?
iTunes.
The iTunes, yes. So when we have someone who gets a lot of videos, music, whatnot, and their phone can no longer handle that much data, they're going to want to upgrade, obviously, but they have all their stuff on iTunes, which means that they're going to have to stay to that iTunes.
Yes.
So this is that 16.1 is that little bait for that trap.
Yes.
That's just how I see it. Completely. So yeah, they may be able to get a significant sum in profit just because people are wanting to upgrade to the more space.
Well, and that's Apple's tactic of, here's the base model 16 gig.
Yeah.
But if you're doing any sort of legitimate usage on it, you're going to run out very, very quick. Now, in the iPhone 6 model, they did double the storage in the base model or the middle model from 32 gigs to 64 and from the high end from 64 to 128. So the question is, why didn't they double the base model from 16 to 32 unless they're legitimately using that as a bait to get people into the market, into the industry, into their system? And then when they upgrade to the next one, instead of that base model price, they're getting that another $100 for the next up or $200 for the highest model.
So, to offer a little bit of rebuttal to that, when the original iPhone was released, the base model was 4 gig.
Yep.
That was quickly increased. They did away with that fairly rapidly. The base model, as far as I recall, as through to the iPhone 4, it was either the 4 or the 4S, the base model was 8 gig.
Yep.
So to say that they haven't doubled it is not exactly fair.
True. They didn't double it with the iPhone 6 release like they doubled the other two models. But they did double it, if your statement is accurate, which I believe it is, from the 4S series to the 5 and 5S series. It went from 8 to 16. Then you had 32 and 64. But when the iPhone 6 came out, they maintained the 16 model, but bumped the 32 to 64 and bumped the 64 to the 128. But
yes,
the statement from this author, Neil Seibert, says that if they were to do away with the 16 gig option, that they would lose out on $3 billion. I don't think that's a true and accurate statement.
I don't think they would lose that much, but they would definitely lose. You figure how many people walk into the phone store looking to not pay.
Sure.
Right? They want a subsidized phone, and, you know, they're prepared to sign a 500-year contract as long as they don't have to pay anything up front.
Yeah.
Now, I'm speaking from experience because I did.
Of course.
Right? I got a subsidized phone because that's the way it is in the American market. So, you know, the 16 gig model is definitely appealing when you can walk into the store and for, you know, $99, or if you catch it on a special for free, they hand you the phone when you sign your life away, and you're done.
Correct.
Now, you know, $100 premium to step up to the next size phone doesn't sound like a whole lot, but that's coming from our point of view. There are definitely people where $100 is a lot of money.
There's a lot of people out there that can't afford even the base model when it comes available. They've got to go with I don't want to say subpar, but a phone without the same features. How about that?
So to the article's point and to your argument, pardon me, do I think they would lose $3 billion if they discontinued the 16 gig model? No, I don't think so. But they would definitely lose some because they would lose that lower price market where they're able to compete in now. Yes, maybe the phone is crippled storage-wise. Do I think the pricing levels make sense? No, there's no way it costs that much for storage, but that's the prices that are common in the industry.
Sure.
Not just with Apple. And yes, I think they would lose some money because they would lose that low end of the market.
And that's possible. I think that Apple has done such a good job marketing and doing such a good job of getting their phone in the hands of people that if people walk in wanting an iPhone, they're going to walk out with an iPhone. If it costs them $100 more than they expected because that's what options are available today, people will find a way to make that work.
They will try to, but they may not always be successful. And there are plenty of people that are prepared to take less storage in order to still have an iPhone.
Agreed.
The sales figures point to that.
Well, clearly they point to that. Now, that being said, we do have an alternative for people. There are numerous hard drive companies, Seagate being one of them, and I'm sure plenty of others have a similar option, that offer a portable powered hard drive that you connect to your smartphone or devices wirelessly, but is private to only you, so that if you run out of space on your smartphone or your tablet, you have this third device that could have anywhere to 500 to a terabyte of space, you'll never need space again. And then you don't need to worry about buying the $200 or $300 priced iPhone. You can maintain this single storage device for multiple devices. So
agreed. And they are a very neat solution, but they come with their own set of, cons, in that you now have another device that you need to carry with you.
You have another device you need to carry with you if you know that you have to access that much content.
Oh, sure.
You know, it's not like you'd be carrying it with you every day if you didn't have a need for it.
Absolutely. No, I agree with you. But the other con to that, and this one I will lay at Apple's feet, is the way their system is locked down, which does make it more secure, but also adds the con of it doesn't make it easy to access those external devices. You generally have to download the app that goes with the device that will connect into their system.
True.
Yep.
True.
To let you access those files, and you're still limited on what you can do with them.
Sure.
That's so, fair to say. You know, if you wanted to carry around 200 movies and not have them on your phone, those external Wi-Fi hard drives are absolutely brilliant, and you can connect in and watch your movies, you know, that way. But they're certainly not the absolute answer.
But they're an option.
I'm trying to think.
They are an option.
Need like 200 movies. I think Brad, because he flies a lot, but still.
I mean, he flies. He's got his tablet. He doesn't always want to. Can't trust the internet reliability where he goes. You know, there's definitely uses for it. There's no argument with that. Maybe DJs or music people that need to test or you know, do stuff with different music. They need to have a huge range of music on a device that a phone or tablet can't handle. A lot of stuff like that. And it keeps you away from the cloud-based storage where your content is available elsewhere. You have to rely on a third-party service. So that's a big factor that I like about it.
Absolutely.
But anyway, yep. Like I said, no secret, Apple's raking in the money, and they will continue to do so.
And keeping on the tech side of things this time, Nintendo is already looking at hardware for their successor to the Wii U.
Sorry. Pardon.
Wow, okay. With an interview with Shigeru Miyamoto, the guy behind Mario, said that the part of the company was looking into hardware. Also goes along with working with Sharp, which is a deal they made earlier in the year for more odd displays. Because apparently Sharp makes oddly shaped displays.
I don't know. Sharp is probably doing something with the curved screens, like I think Sony and Samsung are doing too. So,
even though that they still say they're gonna focus on the Wii U, but they are looking more into hardware for their next system. And what kind of bothers me with this is that if they're are working with Sharp for a oddly presented screen, is there, are they still keeping with this weird peripheral setup, which is pretty much, in my opinion, hampering them in every way?
So, lay it out for people who aren't super familiar with the peripheral system that you're talking about.
Well, when they released their the Wii, the first one, they had that stick.
Yeah.
And EA basically came out and said, our Frostfire 3 engine does not run well on the Wii U, or on the Wii, and their Frostfire 4 engine will not... we talked about this, like, first year of the podcast, so yep. That's pretty far back. They then came out with the Wii U, which it has basically an tablet control system. Or control. Well,
it's joint. They can be tablet or screen, right?
Yep. Still.
Okay.
And now they're rumor partnering with Sharp, who are apparently known for making oddly shaped displays, keeping with this peripheral setup, which is hampering them, in my opinion, because they are not doing too well in the money standpoint. Because we have third-party game makers who are saying, we're not making games for this system. The only real game that I believe probably sold pretty well on the Wii U was Bayonetta 2. And that's because apparently no one else wanted to take up that series.
Well, you got the Mario Kart and the Smash Brothers and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but that's all offered in-house. On
Wii U. That's true, it's all in-house. It'll be interesting to see what happens. I mean, we all were hoping they were going to do something different before they announced the Wii U, and, you know, they're due for something groundbreaking that, right now they're behind the curve on, it seems.
He did continue to say that Mario, he always wanted Mario to help usher in the next era.
Yep.
So... apparently that's what they're doing. I mean, we think of every system they've come out with, Mario has always been that Nintendo poster boy.
Yep.
Well, the reason why I laughed at the top of the story is, as of end of third quarter this year, PlayStation or Sony had sold 13.5 million PlayStation 4s.
Wow.
Okay. Meanwhile, Microsoft announced on November that they have shipped 10 million Xbox Ones.
Shipped, not sold.
Shipped, not sold, granted. However, the Wii U, after 2 years, yep, 2 years in production, has sold 7 million worldwide.
And that goes along with my statement saying they're not doing too well.
No, they're not.
They are not doing well. Yeah, they're definitely not doing well. Xbox One sold 1 million consoles within 24 hours of being available. PlayStation 4 had over 1 million pre-orders as of the launch date. Meanwhile, the Wii U took 41 days to reach 890,000 units.
Yeah, and no one wanted it.
And look at the release date. The release date with the Wii U, I'm sorry, I don't have that number with me. I think there was about 6 months between the Wii U launch and the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One launch.
Mm-hmm.
To which they had that window and nothing was on that system that anyone wanted to play.
Yep.
They had that jump start.
You know, if they want to get into tablet games, they need to make tablet games, but not make a tablet that has to work with a system to be able to do games. I mean, it's a very backwards way of thinking in this day and age. When you've got every company you can think of makes a tablet, and now they're making a screen and a remote control is essentially all it is.
And I think it's sad because Nintendo has always been the cornerstone of casual gaming.
Yeah, when your mom tells you.
Even with the Wii, It was easy to get into. The games were whimsical and fun.
Yep, lighthearted. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. Wii was never, you know, from Wii on, it was never the serious gamer's console, but it was still awesome. It was fun when you wanted something casual. Yes. And the Wii U was just so underwhelming in performance, in specs, in the games that weren't signed to it. Just everything about it was just kind of blah.
Most people in the gaming community just write it off. It doesn't even exist.
Yeah. Pretty much. And to your point, I agree with you that the whole tablet concept was the wrong move for them. You know, we already have tablets in our house. Yeah. I don't want to buy a dedicated gaming tablet.
Yeah, that won't work if you leave the room or leave the house.
Exactly.
I think they said that the tablet could be used as a screen in case
it's still playing the game on the tablet, though, yeah. So it's got to be within range.
Agreed.
It's not like you can take it down.
I'm guessing you have to be on the same Wi-Fi network or something similar for it to keep communication with the console.
Or local infrared or something like that.
Yeah. So, you know, maybe the best bet for Nintendo to remain relevant is to stop doing their own consoles. Go the way of Sega and license or even make their own games, continue to make their own games, but for different platforms.
Oh, God. Yeah,
I, for one, would love to play Mario on my iPad.
Yeah.
I have not let go of Mario. I love Mario, but I'm not going to buy a dedicated gaming tablet to play it.
Yeah, I'd play the original Mario back on the NES days that most people don't even know what that looks like anymore.
The side scroller. That was awesome.
That's the best game ever.
What's funny is that there's a Mario Kart for the DS.
Yeah.
We have it. You know? And could you imagine the backlash with the company, or not the company, but the industry itself, if one of the big three were just to disappear, just to become software?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, I guess that's my question is, what's the state of Sega as a corporation now that they've gotten out of the hardware industry? For that deal, I mean, be curious to know. I'll look that up if you want to jump onto the next topic, Brad.
All I believe is that Nintendo needs to not try to pull some gimmicky thing with if they do a next console. Don't have some weird display. Don't have some wonky, weird, gimmicky controller. Make a game system.
It's simpler than that. Make a badass gaming PC and a pretty hard drive or pretty shell and call it a console, because that's really what they are nowadays.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. So, going back slightly to what you had alluded to as far as cloud storage and cloud computing, this week in NSA... the latest to be released from the Snowden document treasure trove is that most of the, a good portion of the encryption that's used is fairly weak and they've already broken. So if they don't care, that's fine. Make it easy for them. However, the more significant thing to come out of the recent set of documents is that there are actually some encryptions that the NSA considers, to use their word directly, a threat that they have issues with, that it does take them significant time if they can crack it at all. There's some that the evidence suggests that they're still unable to crack it.
Hmm. Sweet.
Links will be in the show notes. It's written... by a journalist, so the technical terms are watered down and actually understandable. It's from the German newspaper Der Spiegel, who, along with The Guardian, has been breaking the Snowden news. So check out the show notes. There's definitely some interesting information in there about what they're not able to do.
Nice. Well, staying on the NSA concept... NSA finally fesses up to improper surveillance of U.S. citizens.
What?
Yeah, no secret to us.
No way.
But they, really? They finally are admitting to it. NSA released hundreds of pages of heavily redacted documents detailing instances of improper surveillance of U.S. citizens in the last 12 years. Okay, NSA has been doing this a long time. We only know about it because of Snowden, and we think it's recent. It's been going on for a long time.
Oh God, that's it's scary. Been
going on for years.
So the report documents reflect a period from fourth quarter 2001 to second quarter of 2013 in response to the Freedom of Information Act lawsuit filed by American Civil Liberties Union. Though some of the information that has been reported from this has already become public knowledge, the report went on to show that NSA employees either intentionally or unintentionally violated the law to collect private data of American citizens. Some analysts took advantage of the system to gather data on spouses or love interests, so much so it was given a name, LoveInt, I-N-T. NSA claims...
For intelligence.
Say that again?
INT is spy speak for intelligence.
Yeah, exactly. NSA claims individuals acting on their own accord have been held accountable for those actions.
Sure.
So, sure they have. Hey, don't get caught doing this again.
That's yeah, exactly.
So.
Yeah. I think this just, it's a good sum up of everything we've been talking about. You know? Absolute power corrupts absolutely.
That's right.
And I don't, you know, I don't have a problem with the NSA doing targeted surveillance with, you know, reasonable cause that has been verified by a court and authorized. That's their job.
Yeah.
I would be worried if they weren't doing it. Exactly. My problem is the broad dragnet of the entire internet. You get too much stuff. Most of which is not applicable, and, you know, too many innocent people get caught up in it. And it's not right.
Why am I just now envisioning some guy who has to look at all the cat pictures?
No.
Okay, damn.
Yeah. That's what you do when you piss off the director.
So I'm trying to look up the financial state for Sega, and I found an interesting graph that in 93 they were worth 28 million. Well, it's, yeah, no. It's like 28 trillion yen because the graph is in yen and millions, and it's at 28,000, so take that to the millionth mark. And then in 98 they tanked hard. They went from at the 5.5 mark, whatever the value is, 5,500, then to the million, whatever that equates to, then into the negative 35,000 mark by 98. So between 97 and 98, they just tanked.
I'm wondering if that's the gaming crash.
That had something to do with Dreamcast, too, because that should be about that time, and that was their new flagship that never really caught on.
Yeah.
And then it looks like in 2001, if I remember right, that's where they decided to get out of the hardware industry. They were at negative 51,000. 2002, they're at negative 17. And then in 2003, they were starting to show positive, and they're showing growth again. But in my quick search, I'm having trouble finding what they're worth today.
Okay, so I would put forward the hypothesis then that getting out of the hardware industry, which they were most certainly losing, saved the company. They were tanking hard.
Yeah, they were tanking. I mean...
Hard. They were done.
They were done.
They were Titanic.
They
bad.
Were done.
Yeah.
So they bailed on the hardware industry and they became something again.
Yeah.
No, they don't have their own system, which, you know, I know some fans. I know some Dreamcast fans and some Genesis fans. But, you know, we just got Sonic for Xbox.
Yep.
Kids have Sonic on their tablets.
We have a Genesis in the cupboard, not 10 feet away from me. I'd love to hook it up again.
Sure.
I just
would have to hook it up again. Yeah. Could you imagine trying to hook that thing up to an IDF TV?
It won't be easy.
No. Well, no, it wouldn't be that hard to do it. The concern is that those things were engineered at sub 720p resolution, and now they're on 1080p and 4K displays. Like, they're going to look like junk.
Okay, yeah.
Absolutely.
Remember you trying to play Abe's Odyssey on a high-definition TV?
I love that game.
That was on, like, what, the PS1?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So let me throw out another name and see if it means anything to either of you. Commodore?
The 64.
Now, there's a company that never got out of the hardware industry completely, and they're not even a name now.
Yep, they're dead.
They're done. 1994 was the last Commodore. They're done.
Ouch.
So the moral of the story is you got to look at a lost cause as a lost cause and go in a different direction. Otherwise, you're just riding that thing into the grave.
And I think that's what Nintendo needs to face. My opinion, for you know, that's all it is. But given the flop that the Wii U has been, you know, maybe it's time to bail from the hardware market, concentrate on making their software awesome. Again, how many of us would rush out and buy, you know, Mario for whatever other system we have?
Yeah, or a tablet. I mean, most of the Mario games would be easy to do a tablet. They've already got plenty of racing games. Doing a Mario Kart for the tablet would be a piece of cake.
Mario parties?
Yeah, a Mario Party would be a piece of cake on a tablet. Yeah.
They could even reuse some of the old catalog. For those of us that are now adults that have disposable income, you figure, you know, Mario 64 was cool, and Mario World, whatever the latest greatest one is interesting. But you and I grew up on Mario 1 and 2.
Yep. And 3 with the raccoon Mario.
Absolutely. That was awesome. You know, and I would love to have that on my tablet. And the processing power of the early NES and Super NES systems, the tablets nowadays blow them away. They could easily convert that over.
I know. Nah, I want that so bad right now. And make
millions. They could make millions off of the back catalog.
Yeah, they totally could. And it shouldn't be hard, but it's up to them to do it.
Absolutely.
Well, we're just to touch over the hour mark, and I think we're going to call it there. We did go very long in the opening of the show, but that's what happens when we're not here for a couple weeks. So if you enjoy the personal stuff, you're welcome. If you don't, we apologize. And
you got a couple billions in there. You got to drink a little. You
got to get your New Year's game on a little early with the B word, so it's... it's good stuff. But with that, we hope everyone has a happy and healthy New Year's, and then obviously a happy
and a safe New Year.
New Year to come.
Yes.
Stick with us. We'll talk to you next year.
Keep on gaming.
That's a wrap.